unheardnerd.com.
This is Word to the Nerd, the interview podcast from theunheardnerd.com. I'm your host, Will. You can find me on Twitter, it's at theunheardnerd, facebook.com/theunheardnerd, and hit me up on the email, it's theunheardnerd@gmail.com. Joining me on the show this time round, my very special guest is none other than Adam Warrock. Enjoy the show.
Listen up, yeah, it's a word to the nerd, coming through the speakers from the one you never heard. A brand new show you don't want to miss, because you never heard a nerd with a style like this. Nerdcore, hip-hop, 8-bit, pop rock, it's our culture on the rise and it won't stop. Podcast drop, best day of the week, because the unheard nerd is about to speak. The unheard nerd is about to speak. The unheard nerd is about to speak.
Let the crowd will never hang around.
We held court in the land where gods and kings watched. Our hearts forged with metal and great lessons were taught. A great weapon was hoisted out the sky and it fell, cracking the ground beneath as the earth's belly had swelled. And a man, just a regular, ordinary citizen, daydreaming through life though he battled against the listlessness to see the world, cause inside him there grew a power that made its way from the gates to places new. Reading the sword and the stone, he knew the stories of his father, and he dreamed of bigger things though he rarely ever bothered. Till the day when he was face to face, a man in the mirror, fate's death hand was nearer as the plan became clearer. And any other day he might have passed that by, but any other day wouldn't have the will to try. But with that from inside, he reached out and took control of his life. Now the people all over the world know. Now I'm back to change the story, and I'm back to make it mine, and I'm back to switch the history given to me by the gods and the creators whose hands touched the divine. When my life was changed the day I first touched the mind, this is the retcon. The future's never gonna be the same, this is the retcon. Don't rewrite history again, this is the retcon. Adam's back to settle the score, this is the new event back at your comic book store.
Very much considering this an achievement unlocked, it's my great pleasure to welcome to the show Adam Warrock. How are you doing, sir?
I'm doing good. Thank you for having me on your show, and I'm glad we could finally put all this tension behind us.
It's been building for many a year.
And, oh, yeah.
I mean, I don't really remember how it all started, but I'm willing to put it behind us. Just for anyone who's listening, he doesn't really understand what that's about. I got a little bit butthurt, I think, is the correct term.
No. It was a misunderstanding about the tone of texts and tweets, which happens in this day and age quite often. And I think I am as much to share the blame, because when I am tweeting at people on my phone, I probably just kind of like say something that sounds really angry, but don't mean to. So it was just funny. I was listening to your interview with Michael Kill.
Yes.
And you had said that, and I just started laughing, because I was like, man, I have no, or maybe Kill told me that. Yeah. You had said that, and I went back and listened to it, and I was like, man, I don't know what he's talking about. So I'm glad we could talk.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I have mentioned it. I've spoken to people about it, and I'm like, yeah, never, yeah, in derogatory terms or whatever. I think what it is I have this desire that I just want to get on with everybody, you know, in the nerdcore community. Everybody I've met has been so cool. Everyone's been really nice. I've never really had a bad experience, and I so desperately wanted you to like me, I think. And but anyway, that's all good. It's all cleared up, and it was never anything more than a figment of my imagination. So I'm really glad to clear the air. You have a new EP out, which is Gifted Student.
Yes.
We'll come on to that a little bit later. But as is often the way with the show, I'd like to start with a little bit of your origin story. And I know you've told this time and time again, probably all over the internet, but there should be people listening that perhaps don't know it. And we don't have to go into too much detail, but I thought we'd just touch on that. You studied and I believe were working in law, is that correct?
Yeah, so the quick story is that I grew up listening to a lot of hip-hop. I started making music like independently when I was in college. You know, I was lucky enough to go to Ohio State in Columbus, Ohio at the time when there was like a really big indie scene there. It's the state where like Blueprint was, and a lot of Def Jux people, like RJD2 and Copyright people, were there. So like the shows in the scene were always, you know, attracting the tours of everybody, like Sage Francis and Atmosphere and, you know, LP, things like that, Aesop Rock. So there's just a really healthy like hip hop and spoken word scene around the college. And I got involved in that, started doing like freestyle battles and kind of poetry slams and things like that. Started recording on my computer in my bedroom and just making music for fun. And then I graduated. And when I graduated, I kind of stopped doing music, went to law school, started working in as an attorney, as a litigator in Washington, D.C. And while I was working at my job, I started making music again because I hated my job. Yeah. And my friend, who weirdly works in the music industry now, was kind of like on my case to start recording again. And he helped me produce an EP. And from there, I started making songs and started, I just happened to know a lot of people who did podcasts and did web comics and did blogs. And my music got passed around to a lot of people. And the site kind of started up as just this place I would dump any song I made. And then, you know, within a couple years, there was enough kind of buzz, and I released my first album and went on tour, and I was able to quit my job.
Let's go back some years, back when I put the mic down, back when I thought my life was about how many dollar signs, how many zeros, and how many commas. I could see them put on the contract before I signed the dotted line, and that financial aid let me get paid. So when I graduated, I'm like already 100k in the hole. So I had to make waves, updated my resume, made my way into the Skull and Bones case. Even though I knew I never fit in with those money hungry grubbing, what number Beamer Benz you're running? But man, I gotta admit, alluring when you're comfortable, paying the bills when they come in. And so I put away the raps and I put away the dreams. I locked them under latch, let them die underneath that lock and fucking key. The luxury of that goddamn degree, but now I'm starving. So when they ask me if I used to make cheese, I'm like, in it for the money.
Might've been a fucking lawyer.
Yeah, ain't it funny?
Might've been a fucking lawyer.
If I never woke up and just tried to make it happen, if I never grabbed the mic and started rapping, man, I should've been a
doctor.
I should've been an
engineer.
I should've been a
businessman.
I should've been a
millionaire.
Could've been so many things here. Let me show ya.
So since June of 2010, I've been doing music full time, and since then I've done, you know, like toured a ton and kind of made my music my living, which is why, you know, I quit my job. The anniversary of me quitting is in June, and that's why every year I do my donation drive at my website in June, because it's like this weird celebration slash, oh my god, I don't have a job.
Relief.
Yeah, of just like, let's make some music and let's see if people want to donate to keep the site going in another year. And you know, we just keep making music. Like, a lot of it's free. A lot of what I do is free on my website. There's like literally over 500 songs on my archives. And there is a couple albums that we do once in a while, just to kind of, you know, it's like have something to sell people at a show. Which is weird, because like for a while people were like, you need more stuff to buy, and I was just like, I'm sorry, I don't know what to do. So I'm forced to make physical compact discs to sell to people.
At least one of those has got as far as London, England. I had myself up here. Very pleased to have that. It's like you dare call that thing human.
Yes.
We'll go through some of the releases. I think I got into your music probably a little bit late, and never really went back to the earlier stuff, which I really should, but yeah, we'll come on to that.
You don't need to, just ignore that. It's not as good. I didn't have mastering software, and my equipment was worse, and my microphone was worse, so.
Well, I think I was impressed with, and going a little bit off topic of your origin story, but I remember, I can't remember which release it was, but you were on the road and you literally, you had GarageBand and a pair of iPhone headphones with a microphone in it, and you made a release, which sounded pretty good.
Yeah, it's that iPhone microphone, the headphones,
yeah,
that come with the Apple, like come in the iPhone box. Those are like, they have like a little bit of gain on them, so they make your voice sound really good. And if you can just like, so what you have to do is you have to like put a hat on.
Yeah.
And keep the headphones in your head and pull the headphone cable like taut so that it's just like not moving, and then ref, and then it works really well, weirdly. So it started as a thing for me to do to record songs when I write them on the road, because I don't remember anything that I like. I have to put it down, or else I'm gonna forget it. And it just sounded really good, and I just like, oh, screw it. I mean, my whole first Game of Thrones EP is all iPhone microphone. I actually didn't even announce that. It's all iPhone microphone. Like Kingslayer and Hodor and like songs like that were all iPhone microphone, which is hilarious because for as many views as those have gotten, I should have gone back and recorded a real version of it. But they're kind of, I don't know, it's kind of like sentimental, I guess, to remember when I was doing it.
I kind of find that in some instances, and not really the case in with you, but you hear some of the earlier demos of artists, and I'm thinking someone like Kabuto the Python. You hear the Parcel Tongue mixtape, and that's really rough and it's raw, but I actually kind of enjoy that a little bit more than the stuff of his that's you know, more polished, and it kind of loses something. It sanitizes it a little bit by having the decent production and the you know, decent vocal takes. I don't know, it's just sometimes I think the raw, bare bones approach really works.
No, I agree. It's funny because like a lot of those Anticon guys that me and Michael grew up on, and we actually know a couple of them now, weirdly, they started making like a really weird kind of art rap in the early 2000s, I guess. And if you go back and you listen to people like Dos One and Soul, you listen to their demos, their early demos, where they're just making like straightforward indie rap, like nothing. They're like rhyming and on beat, but not talking about how they are a bird or something. Their stuff is really good, and we're always laughing because you're like, I wouldn't be who I am today if they had made that really weird, out there kind of non-rhythmic, non-rhyming music. But I weirdly kind of really love the stuff when they weren't trying to do that also. So I agree. It's really interesting to go back and listen to what people were making back when they were like, when you first start making rap music, you're just like, I'm a rapper, I'm hardcore. And you're like rapping about killing people or whatever. And then you keep going and you start to like build up a brand, and you start to build up like something you want to say. And you start to go a little bit off center, and there are always some people who are like, I liked your stuff better when you were just doing really conventional stuff, so, you know.
Yeah, I mean, there is certainly a difference between the music you make and release for free. Obviously, often you're using beats that are just already out there, you know, commercial beats or whatever, as opposed to, you know, your EPs and your paid-for albums where you're having custom beats made by, you know, the likes of Vince Vandal or, you know, Michael Kill and Rob Licton. I mean, there is a difference in the sound. I think the albums, I think you do more with your vocal style. I think the music you release for free, a lot of it, I think you're in a comfort zone some of the time. And that's part criticism, but it's not a bad thing because that's what I like.
Well, yeah, that's because the stuff on the website, it's often, you know, you have to make it quick.
Yeah.
A lot of it's topical. You don't have time to, like, perfect a song, go back and rework it. A lot of times it's like, write it, record it, fix a couple things, and then put it out. And it's more important to talk about, to have something to talk about.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I'm a big proponent of kind of advocating that people don't try to perfect their art. Like, like sometimes you should, which is when I on the albums I try to.
Yeah.
But you should also release stuff that is very raw and it's very unrefined, because in that, a lot of people find something like kind of, there's energy there. And me and Michael, you know, we call it well, it's like, we used to call it like chasing the demo, chasing the dragon, which is, you know, a drug reference. But a lot of times when we are trying to convey to the other what we want the song to sound like, we just record this crazy quick scratch version of it.
Yeah.
And like a lot of times there are lines in there that don't even like make sense, and they're just fillers, and you make a stupid chorus, and you have these really bad ad-libs because we're just trying to make each other laugh. And then we'll go and we'll like make the final song, and we're just like, man, that original is so much better than this. And we a lot of times go back and we just pull the vocals from that scratch track and just use that, because it's attractive, and that energy you have when you're excited about making a song, when you're recording a verse that you've done like literally 80 times in a row, it's never going to sound the same. So I try to do both, you know, like the albums definitely we spend more time on. We try to make a more album like coherent listening experience.
Yeah.
Because the stuff on the website is any direction. It can sound whatever I want it to.
Time Lord, nice to meet you.
Yeah.
You know, I spent some time with your people.
What?
Had a couple of adventures, had a chance for me to learn to sing, laugh, love, eat, and dance. That's the beauty of humanity. You never just stop at something. You see a hole in the ground, and you jump in. You see a star in the sky, you keep building. You make mistakes, pass them on to your children, and you die, and they start it all over again. You shed tears for your friends. Each woman and man, out of these alien races, they try to conquer and control you. But let me tell you what I've seen inside of all of you. And every last one of you, every last bit of you, your hearts are much bigger than hell. I got two of them. I know it hurts every last death, all of them. Gotta be the best when the universe is watching you. And if you need some help, call the doctor, call the doctor. I'll be there in that blue box in a flash. I promise ya, you don't need to ask. And if you need some help, call the doctor, call the doctor, call the doctor. Do me a favor, keep me in your memory. That's the beauty, cause time it keeps flowing. And the love in your heart, that's the thing that keeps me going. Remember that time we saw Van Gogh paint, or the 51st century. Every single thing you see, every single thing you've done, bits and pieces of the universe inside of your mind, where you keep it. Yeah, do me a favor, don't keep it a secret.
I think people are very accustomed to you. I mean, it's you're infamous, really, in the no-call scene for being a prolific artist. You put out so much music. As you said, yeah, over 500 tracks on your website that are free. So it feels a bit weird when thinking about you actually taking your time over an album. But how long does it take for you to put an album together?
I mean, Middle of Nowhere probably took about 8 to 10 months. And it's weird because you write a couple songs, and then you get on a good kick, and then you realize you need two more songs, and you're just like scraping for like ideas. And it can sometimes be as quick. I mean, me and Michael, you know, we work really quickly. That's one of the reasons we get along really well.
Yeah.
And we work really quickly, and this album probably came together in about 2 months. And it just depends, you know, like it depends on how the producer works. A lot of Middle of Nowhere was with Rocky O'Reilly.
Oh, right.
Who is the producer of Malibu Shark Attack.
Yeah,
and
I've actually met him. Yeah,
yeah, he's a good guy. And he, you know, he uses live instrumentation, and he actually really goes back. He like hired a cellist for one of the songs. And you know, so that takes time because it takes multiple people, and you have to kind of like find the right settings and the time and the schedule. And so with Michael, you know, he's using a computer and sampling and kind of creating beats from like what he has in his home studio, so he can make it really quickly. And I think it's just kind of a matter of that, or trying to get guest verses from rappers who are notoriously not punctual.
A common problem. A lot of rappers I've spoken to seem to say this.
We all are amazed that Kabuto made the guest list, because like, and it's not because of the song itself. The song's great, but we're just like so impressed. We're like, how did you get all these people to turn something to you on time? Like, that's like 30 some people that you had to like corral into giving you something usable.
Yeah.
Which is like, it probably could only be Kabuto who could do it. Everybody is either beholden to him, friends with him, or afraid of the consequences of going against him. So
yeah, kind of intimidated. I would thought, yeah, you're gonna get a diss track on the album.
It's still a mystery. If you ever interview him again, you should ask him how hard it was, because I bet there's a story there.
Well, I mean, looking back at some of your releases, and let's go through. I know, talking to Michael Kill, I'm pretty sure he says The War for Infinity is his favorite album.
It's the worst album, right?
It's one I haven't listened to, and I don't know why, because it's always there.
It's quote-unquote out of print.
Is it not on Bandcamp?
You can get on Bandcamp, but like, you can't, the physical copies, I think somebody sent me a link that somebody was selling one of them for like $35 on eBay.
Amazing. And
they think that it's out of print, but really what they don't know is that I just haven't bothered spending the money to print it again. It's not like I ever said, this is never coming back. So yeah. I feel bad for that person because eventually I will reprint it. But I don't know.
You don't think I should bother then?
I think that there's probably copies in some comic stores somewhere because I sold a bunch to comic stores to sell, and I'm pretty sure they haven't been bought. So somewhere out there, somebody could find a copy somewhere. I don't know. I'll make them again eventually. I don't know.
Well, I think an earlier release, and I don't remember what year it is, but it's my favorite. And I don't know, I can't really put my finger on why it's my favourite. I think it just, it's got a nice sentiment and it's quite poignant. Paper Cutters and Dangling Headphones, an EP you did with Tribe One. Sorry, who's the producer on it?
His name's Jules.
Jules, that's correct. In particular, the track Bipolar, because I love Pixies.
Yeah.
And it samples Where Is My Mind.
Yeah.
I really, really love that EP.
You just don't feel like yourself, you know?
My therapist has told me I'm careless when I'm holding an empty bottle of pills. My pharmacist can scold me, and the Prozac don't work the same as it used to. Bodies build a tolerance that don't give me a boost. So I'm feeling down today, I think I'll stay here in the studio and make a sad song, die a little on the track. I think it's whack how some people don't understand how I'm a prince who wants to brood Francis Bacon, spit the beat for Hamlet, rats to be or not to be. So many chose the opposite of what they think they want to be, and so we watch them drop a bit. The stocks that they invest with their dividends, their kids enlisted in the private universities, becoming the future henchmen of the Fortune 500, where they sit and lose their minds. Just another cog that runs the machine for humankind. Chew them up and spit them out, hard to stay grounded in life. So the docs are like the bartenders, mix and match to pass the time. And sometimes I feel up, and sometimes I feel down, and sometimes I wanna watch the world burn to the ground. And I'm losing my mind, I do it all the time, and I don't think that I can make it to the other side. Sometimes I feel up, and sometimes I feel down, and sometimes I wanna watch the sky fall to the ground. And I'm losing my mind, I do it all the time, and I'm just wasting time, and I'm just wasting time. When
I think that came out in 2011, okay. I believe. It's funny, I won this talent showcase that I didn't really want to do, but somebody like kind of tricked me into doing. because I hate doing creative show like competitions. It's really weird. Like,
yeah.
I don't think you should put a rapper next to a b-boy group, next to a cellist, like, and then ask judges to be like, who's the best? one of the prizes for winning this showcase was having the ability to record at this studio in Atlanta called Icon, and Jules worked there. And we were supposed to do one song, and we ended up just sticking around for a whole day, me and Tribe One, and recording just a bunch of songs that we had sort of worked on beforehand, but a lot of that came together very quickly. And so that one is definitely like, it's in a real like professional studio that like Ludacris and Justin Bieber and Young Jeezy have recorded at, and has like a soundboard with like 256 channels and what is it called? Musicians like who are just like there just to like, I can't think of what it is, like session musicians.
My girlfriend was like, some help in the background.
Idiot. We recorded a lot of that stuff just kind of with a bunch of people in the same room. That's the only time I've really ever done that. So that came together really well. And I always tell the story about it where like, you know, I'm really proud of it, a lot of it, but like the Tribe One song on there, which is probably one of his more better well-known songs. He recorded all those verses in one take. Wow. Like first take, no punch-ins, like one after the other. And then they cut it together and we all sat there and listened to it. So he was done in like probably 15 minutes and made this like like one of his best songs I think he's ever done, just sitting there and like bringing in these pieces of paper that he had written them on and just like killed it. It was just really weird and really like really emotional to watch the whole studio full of all these like really like cynical hip-hop people kind of get really quiet and get really like emotional while listening to that song, which is it's called Different. If anyone hasn't heard it, it's called Different.
Everybody should listen to Paper Cutters and Dangling Headbands. I think it's a special release personally, and it was really my introduction to you. That's the first thing I listened to, you know, not necessarily at the time of release, but going back and you know, discovering your music, that was the first one that really got me on board. Interesting you say Tribe One is so, you know, fast to record, because I hear he's probably the slowest writer.
He is. He's slow to record also. That was like a once-in-a-lifetime thing. Me and Michael are notorious for like yelling at him over email to finish a verse. He still owes me like a verse that for a song that was supposed to go on my website like 4 months ago that has never been finished to this day, so...
But
when he's done, it's probably better than things that me and Michael may write in like an hour. So it's like, what do you want? Do you want quality or quantity? You can go to one or the other.
Certainly one of the most talented vocalists I've ever had the privilege of seeing perform. Yeah, on stage, his delivery, you hear every word, it's clear.
It's funny because when you know his influences, you know, he grew up in the West Coast. He listened to a lot of Project Blowed. A lot of like guys like Micah 9, a lot of Living Legends people, and then he loves like Aesop Rock and people who are like, you know, very fast rappers and enunciate very like almost like bus driver-y kind of like very deliberately. So like it's funny when you, because you think his influences should be more like Southern based and or Bay Area based, which is a lot of like gangster rap, and he loves that stuff too, but. It makes more sense when you start to find out that he's like a guy that comes from a lot of the like Good Life Cafe guys and Project Blow and stuff like that when he was on the West Coast, seeing that indie stuff rise up.
I don't know how this has happened. I always end up talking about Tribe One on shows with other people. I'm sorry about that. Let's move on from Tribe One.
Let's not talk about him anymore because he's an asshole.
God, he's just so talented. I hate him.
you only think highly of him because you don't know him very well.
Is that what it is?
Yeah. If you knew him better, you would know what a horrible, soulless person he is.
It's official. There we go. Okay, so
he'll never he'll never hear this either because he won't listen to it.
Will he not?
I'm just joking.
I hate him more now. That's it. I'm never going to speak about him again. No, he's a great guy. I really, really love him as a person. I just bonded very, very quickly with him. Just from the second I met him, he gave me a great big bear hug, and I was in. I was there. I was in love with him. Anyway,
all fakes, all for show. Not to get your cold hard cash from you.
Well, I'm thinking he's so much different to Adam Warrock. He's so cold towards me.
Yeah, it's because the public persona you present is always the opposite of who you truly are, right?
Okay, interesting you say that.
I want everyone listening to this right now to tweet at Tribe11 and tell him that I'm calling him out as a phony.
This is Nerdcore beef. This is it. It's official. You heard it here first.
And while you're at it, tweet at Michael Kill and tell him how much you love Vast Air from Cannibal Ox.
Right, okay. Well, interesting what you said about persona and bringing in Michael Kill, because Michael Kill tells me that realistically, in real life, you are more like the persona in real life of his music, and he is more like the persona in real life of your music. How much of that is bullshit?
I don't know. It's funny because, like, I'm not as sad as he is in his music. He's very sad, and I'm not sad, but I probably am just as angry. He is also not as positive as he thinks he is. I think he just hopes he is to bring him out of his despair pit, which is what he calls it, literally, quote, despair pit. But, no, we are oftentimes two sides of a coin, and when we are around each other, I think people think we hate each other. because we are constantly yelling and making fun of each other like brothers, but it's because we both know that the other can take it. Yeah. And we work really well together because we're really honest with each other, you know, to the point where we'll get into arguments about something, and it will be like heated about how to master something, I don't know, or like if a hi-hat should be louder or not. And it's just because we're really good friends, and I think we both are a lot like both sides. I don't know, it's hard because you're trying to make music that's positive, and I make, because you would, no matter how horribly bleak it is inside your heart, you want to put something out there that's positive. And he put something out there that's positive in a way where he wants people who are sad and angry to identify with his sadness and anger. And I put out stuff that is probably more like, you know, more positive in the other direction. Yeah. But they're both kind of probably necessary to help anybody out there who is feeling not whole.
So how did you and Michael Kill come to team up in the first place?
Oh, this is a great story. So Michael contacted me because my first album came out. He told me this later, so I'm not telling tales out of school. And he said that he was so nice to me because he thought that I was a bigger deal than I actually really was. And he wanted to curry favor with me so that it would benefit him. And at the time, I didn't know who he was or who the Thought Criminals were. And so I just thought that they were like a bigger deal than they really were. And we at some point realized that neither of us were a big deal at all. But by then we had already been talking on IM and over email and Twitter that we had become friends and we were stuck with each other. But like, it is funny that we both fooled each other into thinking that we were anybody worth knowing. And in the end, we were not. I hadn't really done anything. And I always tell the story about how, like, when I first started doing music and nerdcore started getting thrown around, it was Michael, Beefy, and AD from Dualcore who were the first people to kind of welcome me in and to be really nice to me and do guest tracks with me. And I'm very thankful for that, because without them, and Z from Hipster Please, also, who wrote for Wired's Geek Dad for a little bit.
I'm still with Geek Dad, and
formerly just, of Wired, I guess I should say.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, he's just announced that Radio Free Hipster is coming back.
Oh, nice! Yeah,
they've done a Patreon for Geek Dad, and one of the incentives was if they get so much, then they'll bring back the podcast, and they're there.
Without those three guys and Z, and because Z actually introduced me to Hex from Nerdapalooza, but. That kind of core group were the first people to kind of get my name out there and were really nice to me. So I owe a lot to them in terms of getting out there. And we just started working together because I think we both hadn't really done a lot of stuff with other people. And I mean, within a year, we did the Brown Coats mixtape. And that was because I knew he could produce and I knew he was really good at it. And we had a really good shared vision for it.
No cause for concern, no cause that would cause me to turn. Except a couple dollars of charging me for the work done. Roll with the crew, quick to switch and quick to draw on them too. And switch the sides if the odds favor the other one. My ethical stance as a man in this wasteland is my plan to live longer than the one across the table from me. Heart of gold, protect villagers and hookers the same. You know my name, the first name my parents gave to me. Wild West, Billy the Kid, Buffalo Bill. Tussle with any gunslinger with muscle to spill. No fear in my eyes, no place for you to hide. When I'm chilling in the sniper's nest, hands tremble, you die. And his mama knitted him a cap to keep his head warm, cause the nights out on the fringes are much colder than norm. Y'all know the name, but best whisper it softly in the streets. Let me tell you, case you ever should meet. Yo, it's all about a boy named Jane, the baddest gunslinger and bandit who robs freighters and trains. Gangsters in the frontier, sky and land the same. Some call him a space cowboy. Yo, it's all about a man named Cobb, as he's standing in the light, silhouette bigger than God. Yo, nowhere to hide, man, there's nowhere to run. He's the man with the gun.
Here, trigger, match my cold exterior. Pull on this real fast, I leave you feeling much drivier. Keep the sheet at the bedside, ask the military bye-bye, so you never have to hide. A lot of pride, Mean mugging every rib I go. Step to Jane wrong, getting thrown out of that window. I'm never slow to anger, see you in danger. Soon as you go trying to be pulling up on that banger, but I let you know, Vibber never let me down. Come through, mowing down these clowns, and I have found it's a sound that comes bouncing off these walls as thunder. By the time you hear the crack, it's too late, it's a blunder. You ain't getting out of this alive, still I survive, and you know it's already time. You gonna die where you stand. I'm taking matters into my own hands, and Vibber knows exactly who it is, the man. Good, bad, I'm the guy with the gun. Dude is never scared to reach out and touch someone, to crush someone. You know what the deal is. Ask the mothers, man, they know what the real is.
It just, I don't know, it just, it's easy to work with him because we're friends and because we also are incredibly neurotic and just like want it to sound at least to an acceptable level.
Yeah.
And there, a lot of producers aren't like that. A lot of producers, they hate working with me because I will send them like 80 emails constantly adjusting every single little thing in it until they like despise me and curse my name.
Well, the Browncoats mixtape it has to be a success in my mind because I had never watched Firefly or Serenity before listening to that, and I enjoyed the shit out of it. And it actually encouraged me to then go and watch the show.
Yeah, that's good. The show is great.
I really don't think I'm unique in that experience. I think a lot of people perhaps listened to that EP and really enjoyed it and then went to check out, you know, what is this show you're talking about? So yeah, I mean, that was fantastic. And you got an awful lot of exposure from it. I mean, you actually got Nathan Fillion. Did he tweet about it?
He did. It got covered on The Escapist and he tweeted about the link from there. And then it broke my site for a day and a half while I was on tour, on the NC Chris tour.
Right.
And it was crazy. Like, we definitely to this day owe that mixtape to why a lot of people know who we are.
Mm.
And it was their first kind of taste of like seeing something go like small time viral. Mm. And just like, we're glad that it was about the show. Because we could have easily made three more mixtapes about it. Like, we had to cut stuff off of it because we couldn't just keep making songs about it. But there's so much stuff in there that owes itself to music really well. There's a lot of shows, a lot of comics that it's really hard to like make a cohesive mixtape about without it just sounding like you're like, and here's the blank song, and now here's the blank song. Like, you know.
Yeah.
And for some reason, Firefly worked really well. Like, I watched like four seasons of Star Trek: The Next Generation because I'd never really watched it before because I grew up not watching Star Trek at all.
Yeah,
intending to do like an EP or mixtape about it, and in the end I was like, I really enjoyed it like a lot, but in the end I was kind of like, I don't really know what to make music about. Like, there's not really anything to make music about other than like, here's the Picard song, here's the Data song, here's a Worf song. Here's a Riker trombone song.
I know what you mean. I think there's more substance to the characters of Firefly than something like Star Trek.
We could have easily, like, seriously, there's like no Inara song. There's like, there's no real Wash song. It's sort of, but not really. Like, we could have gone much further with it, but we had to get it out. In fact, we were supposed to keep working on it, and then I got offered to do the MC Chris tour. And they're like, I was like, hey, Michael, we thought we had like months before this, and now I'm leaving in like 5 weeks, so we gotta finish it now. So, you know, it kind of was.
And then you went on to make the Slytherin House mixtape with Michael as well.
Yeah, it's just keep on preying upon the fandom of obsessive fandoms.
I mean, I have seen Harry Potter films, I just can't get into it personally. I'm not a fan.
Oh really? Wow.
Yeah.
Do you like fantasy?
Not so much. No, I think that's the problem. That's probably, you know, I don't like the Lord of the Rings or anything like that. It's not really my thing.
I don't know. I really enjoy it. The series, and it's funny because I actually don't like fantasy that much either. But I don't know. Something about it's really fun. I only the movies. The books I enjoyed a lot, but like the movies were very like, I don't know, big Hollywood franchisee, which is like sometimes you want to see.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I'm not against that, you know, that whole big studio, big budget movie thing. You know, I don't avoid them because, oh no, it's not true art or whatever. It's not about that. And my wife is, you know, is definitely a fan. She took a day off work once to read one of the books, you know, read the whole book in a day sort of thing. So, you know, the films are here, and I'm thinking that maybe once my kids are old enough, we'll watch them, and maybe I'll get something from them. But at the moment, I can't buy into it. I don't know. But what I did buy into, and even though I can't relate to the subject matter that much either, is La Boheme, the little EP you did with Opera Memphis and Michael Kill. How on earth did that come about?
It's weird. Like, when I lived in Memphis, the director of Opera Memphis is a guy named Ned Canny. And he comes from, you know, he'd worked in television before, come from New York, and came to be the director. And he's also just a huge nerd, like huge nerd, to the point where it's hilarious sitting there talking to this, like, you know, guy, and this person who looks very much like an adult, a professional, and he's the director of an opera, and he's, like, ranting about, I don't know, normal nerd stuff. Yeah. But he knew about my stuff from Brown Coat's mixtape, ironically. And he contacted me and just kind of pitched this idea of doing this because in the arts and things like that, like, it's really hard to distinguish yourself, you know? Like, there's a set audience of opera and high arts, and then after that, it's like, you don't just decide to go to the opera one day, you know?
Yeah.
And he wanted to do something that would kind of showcase the opera to younger people, and we did this EP with them, and I performed it at their kind of festival outside the opera the night of the opening night.
And we live and we love and we die. First of all, not a penny to my name. Make art, we sell to patrons to find reasons to blame. Their problems on the poor, their fortunes on themselves. Their lives wrapped up in living, there's nothing truer to tell. Artists stick together, stretching the dollars we save. But Colleen is run a couple of jobs working today. And tonight we'll drink and toast, it's time for Cafe Moments. Save our troubles for those with less weight on their shoulders. I never live to let me live today. Let me pass long before my hair turns gray. And let my writing soak the fire till we see the flames. And finally we can say my life had something to say. Life is joy, love is best, and from the first moment I found her, I drowned inside a deep sea of candles and memories. Together we step with these heaving sighs and reveries. This is what it always was meant to be. And to live is to love, and to love is to live. Look at all the riches we have, all this love to give. If I never see old age, let me die like this, in the arms of a woman that taught me life is bliss. And to live is to love, and to love is to live. Look at all the riches we have, all this love to give. If I never see old age, let me die like this, in this moment, cause there's plenty left to give. Second of all, she swung like a wrecking ball to my building. We're shaking hands, just searching for warmth. I lit her candle, though it kept going out from the breath of my mouth. And I pocketed the key to her house. And she reminds me of a girl I used to know, somewhere in a dream, there in the back of my mind. I turn to see her smiling back as she looks for me. Then I see a lovely girl bathed and painted in moonlight. That's the moment where I came alive. Living is love, and if I can't abide by all the things inside, then tell me the reasons why. I write these words on every single blank page I keep inside. So take my hand and let us fight the night. Let the cold be the thing that keeps us close together. And though the future's less bright and our pockets are light, life is free and this feeling will let us live forever. And to live is to love, and to love is to live. Look at all the riches we have, all this love to give. If I never see old age, let me die like this, in the arms of a woman that taught me life is bliss. And to live is to love, and to love is to live. Look at all the riches we have, all this love to give. If I never see old age, let me die like this, in this moment, cause there's plenty left to give. And we live and we love and we die.
It just worked out really well. There's a lot of, like, stuff in opera plots, the melodrama, the kind of emotions in it that lend itself really well to making, like indie hip-hop songs about, weirdly.
Yeah.
And I had never really seen La Boheme before. And it was really cool because my mom actually she, you know, she was a voice major in college. She had sung opera before, and she was like a choir director for a lot of her life. And I got to take her to the opera in Memphis, and we got to sit in like super nice seats because of it. So it was really like a very validating experience for me to be able to tell my mom, like, this is because I rap, you know, like, I don't know if she fully understood. She was just like, this is cool. But
I mean, in making that, surely you have to understand the story, the plot. And I wonder, you know, the lyrics are in a different language that, you know, they're being sampled. How do you get that all together and have it make sense? Are people going to listen to that and go, well, actually what he's rapping about doesn't match at all what's in the music?
A lot of research and watching subtitled videos of it,
right,
to kind of understand, and watching Rent also to kind of like understand what's going on. Because I didn't see it, you know, like we were preparing it for its opening night, so it's not like I could just go and like watch people do La Boheme.
Yeah.
So it was good, and like it was kind of an interesting way to make something. I also had the benefit of being able to talk to people at the opera and just ask them questions about it, which was really cool to see, like, the inner workings and the rehearsals and things like that. So it was a really cool experience. Not something that a lot of rappers, I imagine, don't get to do, is work with opera.
Yeah.
Except Mos Def, when he made MTV's Carmen. Which, do you remember that? Am I the only one?
No, never. No, I haven't come across it at all, no.
So, the opera Carmen, yeah. MTV once did a hip opera where everything they did was either rapped or sung. I believe Beyonce was in it. And it was, I'm sure it got a lot of ratings, but I don't know if it was like critically praised as like a moment of high art.
So bizarre, but I feel compelled to watch it.
I'm sure you could find it on some torrent site somewhere. I'm sure it exists.
Has to be.
But it was, look up MTV's Carmen if you want to see a hip opera, and it's very different from what me and Michael did.
I really do want to see it. And Michael let out the bag on the show that he was on not so long ago. And then you did a follow-up to La Boheme that was just swept under the carpet, the bastard son that was just not wanted.
Even though I feel like we did a better job with that one, because we kind of knew what we were doing at this point. And it was to, what was it to? I don't even remember.
It was Figaro, was it?
Oh, yeah, yeah. But there's a name of that. It's not Figaro.
Oh, I've got it here. Hang on, I can look it up.
Oh man, I don't even know what it is.
It didn't stay a secret for very long. You see, it was. Oh, so it's Rigoletto.
Rigoletto, that's right.
Not Figaro.
Which is like funny because like the topic of, we're talking so much about opera on this podcast, but the topic of Rigoletto is actually like really dark and really twisted and like way more up me and Michael's like alley.
Yeah.
Like, we had like a lot of fun with it, and not really that many people heard it. So
yeah,
you know.
Why wasn't it released? What happened? What?
I just think that there was. I mean, I guess I don't care. I can tell the truth. Like at the time, there was like a big changeover in the promotion and marketing team of Opera Memphis, and like a lot of leadership change. And I think that we kind of got pushed out because like we couldn't tell them what to do to promote it. They were just like releasing press releases and just like kind of like letting it fall on deaf ears. Which I don't blame the director of it. I blame the fact that they were now kind of beholden to like a corporate, like, marketing and promotion team, and that was not as like motivated to kind of get the word out about rap as it was back when it was just the director and us kind of just doing it very like organically, you know?
Yeah.
So it happens. I mean, like we've done so many weird one-off songs all over the place, that podcast themes and things like that, that you would never be able to compile it all together, and a lot of it gets swept under the rug. Can't talk. But yeah, so that's what happened with that, and it sucks because it was actually something that we really enjoyed doing. It's like a lot of like death and darkness in it that's a lot more like interesting to me and Michael. So if you want to listen to it, it's out there somewhere, I think.
It is. I mean, I posted the show up on the Nerdcore Facebook, I always forget what it's called, group. And I think within about 15 minutes, someone had found it.
Yeah.
And posted a link. So it is you know, there. It can be found. And if not, just trawl through the Facebook site and you'll find the link. Okay, before we come on to your latest release with Michael Kilburn, let's go back and look at your, I guess, two most recent albums. You Dare Call That Thing Human, which, I'll be honest, had me worried a little bit. I thought this was the point where you were going to do a bit of an MC Lars or a Doc Awkward, and you were going to say, right, I'm just a rapper, I'm not a nerdcore rapper anymore.
No, that is the nerdcore album.
Well, the thing is, for me, there was a bit more attitude and cockiness and almost, I don't know, like attitude that came from that album. And I was really worried, and I don't know why. I'm obviously misconstrued it, because, you know, a year or two down the line, and still as it always was in terms of, you know, your commitment to making nerdy music. But I did honestly think that, hang on, this could be the moment where you're actually sort of getting a bit bigger, you're working with some of the bigger artists, and you know, you're going to stop associating so much. That was never a thought for you.
No, not really. I wrote that album after being on tour for like 3 straight months, and it was kind of after I had done my first national tour and kind of like seeing what life is like in living in hotels and in your car. And I think there was a lot of like, it's like kind of like this release of like a lot of, not frustration, that's the wrong word, but like just basically kind of trying to figure out what the next step is after you've done this really big thing that was also really hard but really good. And you know, when you make an album when you're really tired, you're just probably grumpy and you probably just make really angry music
and tweeting people very sharply and... I know
but I mean, and also The War for Infinity was the only album I really released, and like that's like a story album.
Yeah.
And it didn't really have a lot of attitude on it. It didn't really have a lot of up-tempo stuff. And also because Vince Vandal is a guy who makes, like, really aggressive-sounding beats in general.
Yeah.
And it just kind of flowed from that, I think. It was just kind of, like, an excuse to make it sound a little bit different than it was before. And so...
Well, I mean, the song that really stands out, you know, the biggest alarm bell for me in that album was The Kids Table with Dr. Awkward, and that is quite a, I don't know, it's a different, very different tone from you.
Yeah, I mean, that was the point of it, because, like, when you do a song with Awk, you have to kind of, you gotta kind of be cocky.
Yeah, I guess, yeah.
I mean, and in a good way, I mean, that is who he is on stage, and you love him for it.
Yeah.
And I was like, well, I gotta match this. And so it was fun doing it with a lot of different people, like Lars and Awkward and people like that. Yeah. And so, and then, like, you know, when I had some time to kind of make an album more about, that was more thoughtful, I made Middle of Nowhere, which is definitely an album that was probably a lot more about what I'm thinking and feeling, you know.
Yeah. I mean, by then I was not concerned anymore. I mean, City Beautiful came out with Rob Victon, and that was a much more considered and thoughtful release. It felt like and much more from the heart. I think it was about, you know, was it about Memphis? Is that correct?
Yeah, to a certain degree, it was about home. You know, because like I decided to stop kind of touring for a little bit and just like living a life where I had friends and had, like, you know, didn't have to live in hotels. And so it was a lot more about coming home. We, you know, it got to like make some videos and do some shows at home. It was kind of like a homecoming album in a lot of ways. And the Middle of Nowhere is kind of like the what do I do now like,
yeah.
I don't know what else to do at this point.
Yeah, a fantastic album. In particular, I've been sort of listening to some of your music again recently just to prepare a little bit, and Jarvis is just a fantastic track. That's such a good track.
Evil Mutants member, yeah. With an M on my face in case you don't remember. For my people in Genosha and Madripoor, what I'm rapping for. This is what you're asking for, it's why I'm sent to rip apart every mic to like every kid's delight. For the desperate housewives and the comic book guys. Look guys, man, I rapped about so many things I can't even remember what I'm rapping about now. Remind me, rappers say they're making Sean Carter money. Man, they ain't even making John Carter money, ain't it funny? Made a living full-time online, dunny, while your mom's like, maybe you should try harder, honey. Yeah, and I ain't living in that nerdy bubble. Man, I'm down in the trenches like a dirty shovel. This ain't a subtweet, man, if I said it, I meant it. And if you ain't on the same frequency, better listen, Kenneth. Yo, know what I'm saying? Check this out. Just a rather very intelligent system in my field of vision. Like whenever I'm on a mission, every mic I'm gripping, dropping it too. Every suit I'm rocking, know I'm rocking for you. The charge is wrapped like when the arc reactor tested mic, it gets a heart attack. This is technology pushed to the limit. This is the future and we're living right in it. The future.
Yeah, it's very. It was done by Danny B, who did the soundtrack to Super Meat Boy. And it's definitely like, you know, in terms of the people I worked with on that album, it's definitely the most star-studded album. It was kind of like the call in all favors album.
Yeah, yeah. You've got Front a lot on there. You've got Schaefer, you've got Into Haiti, you've got, yeah, whoever. But I mean, just it came together really well. Is that one producer or is that a number of producers?
It was a bunch of people.
I can find that's sometimes it doesn't work. You know, you don't have a sort of single voice that goes through the release, and you lose a bit of the cohesion between, like, from start to finish. It doesn't always work as a piece, but this album does.
Yeah, I mean, we were very conscious of that, and we were conscious of making the kind of anchors of the album to be by Rocky O'Reilly, who's, you know, always has a very distinctive sound. Mm. And since everything was kind of in the same ballpark of, like, tone and topic, it kind of came together really well. It's definitely the album that I worked on the longest of, and it was, you know, I have friends in the music industry and I always ask them what I can do better, and they're always like, you need to spend more time on your albums. They're like, you need to work more on your albums, you need to promote your albums at all and not just go back to making website stuff. So I try to take that, you know, to heart and, like, yeah, really work on a good album and then tour to support it. And I toured for like 4 months straight after it, selling copies of it and just telling people about it. So it definitely has been really well received, and I think it was kind of like a nice moment of seeing, you know, the people who were fans of the website and the people who are fans of the fan stuff and the people who were fans of my music to kind of come together and be able to like one thing. So
how interesting to find out on your live shows how much of it is, you know, your album material and how much of it is the free music you release. Do you include that in your set?
Well, I mean, most of it is usually the free music I release because that's what a lot of people know.
Right.
But I'm trying to focus on doing more album stuff so that it makes more sense. but I don't know. A lot of the album stuff, it's not fun to do live because it's so serious or there's like a lot of production in it. And like, I would rather do a song that is like super up-tempo and fun rather than just try to sell an extra copy of my album. So it's more important that people have a good time and that, you know, I have a good time also, rather than doing a song about sadness or existentialism or whatever.
Yeah. What's the biggest hit on a live show? What song gets everyone up?
Man, I don't know. It changes. I really kind of dedicate myself to trying to change my set every time I go out, at least a little bit. But, and I mean, I even move. I when a song starts working really well, I move away from it and put new stuff in there. But the Ron Swanson song that I did for the Parks and Recreation EP that I did, as a finisher, is usually like a really popular one. Even to people who don't care at all about my music, will like perk up with it. And I'm trying to think what else. The Star-Lord song I did recently is usually a really good opener for my sets because it's an up-tempo song with call and response. And then really there's just like, you know, we kind of change a lot of our songs live to kind of make it more interactive. We do a lot of smaller shows, so we know the value of making sure people are engaged rather than people just sitting there in the auditorium watching a show.
You mentioned the Startled track, and there's a remix of which on Gifted Student, your most recent release, produced by Michael Kill, vocalized by your good self. quite a few surprises on this EP. I think I have to straight away say Nerds Won't Dance to this. Nerdcore Disco. I mean, it could be the future.
That is the We Need 8 songs and we have 7 songs. And I was at Kill's house and we made this. He was sampling just a bunch of stuff. And I was like, I want you to make the most party cheese ball like song beat possible. And I was like, it was like painful to him because he hates beats like that. And I was just like, I don't care. I was like, I want to be happier. I was actually there next to him when he made the Star-Lord beat.
Oh really?
And he despised it like with all his heart and soul. And we thought it was gonna be for another song, and then I started realizing that the rhythm was exactly like what could fit with the Star-Lord song. And then it just turned into that immediately. So I think it came out really well.
Yeah. But, I mean, I can't imagine Michael. I can't imagine how that ever came out of his body.
Yeah.
But, yeah, very surprised. I'm not a massive fan of the disco or, you know, that upbeat kind of music either. But it works. I really enjoyed it. So, Gifted Student. I mean, what's it about? What's the theme? Is there a theme?
I mean, EPs are harder to peg down in terms of a theme. It's a lot of times just a collection of good stuff. But I guess, like, it started on Middle of Nowhere. And then with, like, a song like High School Reunion, you know, is how many ways can we talk about what it means to be nerdy and geeky without saying nerd or geek in it, you know?
Yeah.
And Gifted Student is another way of just kind of, like, this mixture of being excelling at what you do but still being like outcast in some ways for it. And you know, a lot of it kind of comes from the fact that like the cover is what it is like a picture of me when I'm 2 playing an Atari 5200 twice as good as the more popular 2600, even though less games than the 2600, which was the popular one.
You don't have to justify it.
And you know, growing up, like, it's this weird thing where like you would go to gifted classes and you'd have to leave the class and go do like projects or like group work and stuff, and you know you come back and people hate you for it. And like it can go a lot of different directions from that point on, where like you choose to focus on like how that feels to be ostracized from people who are like, you know, dumber than you, quote unquote. But it's just this very confused mix, and something that me and Michael talk about a lot, you know, where like there's a reason that there's so much negativity in nerd culture, because a lot of nerdy people are very negative people just by their upbringing and their experiences, you know?
Yeah.
And it's just more instances of just trying to like talk about what that means, and both in the positive and negative ways. And so I don't know, like, it also is just a vague X-Men reference,
right?
And it also was just a good sounding name for an album title. So it's not rocket science, you know, like we just wanted to make an EP. It was more important that I make an album with Michael, which weirdly I had never actually made a for sale album with Michael. And we had been talking about it since we met, and we just hadn't done it. And it's been 4 years later. So it was more important to kind of be like me and Michael's project. And we had been talking about doing a duo album, doing a crew album for so long, and all that kind of get pushed off because we kept making our own albums to try to like pay bills and have something to tour on. And we finally got the chance to do this, and the timing lined up right. So that was the most important part of it.
And yeah, certainly in terms of production, I think, yeah, this is, I wouldn't have expected this from Michael Kill. I mean, it is a very upbeat, yeah, good vibe sort of EP. I mean, especially the first 3-4 tracks just pop straight away.
Really? You, it's funny because, like, do you think that, Lost in Translation is an upbeat song? Like, well, I guess tempo-wise, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's got, yeah, I think... I mean, just like the pianos, the guitars that are used in the samples, it evokes, you know, a good vibe.
Yeah, I mean, it's because like, okay, so Gifted Student was a song that I made him make. I was like, I want a beat that sounds like this tempo, sounds like party song. And then Lost in Translation is a beat that he already had just sitting around.
Okay.
And I just took. And so, like, I think in a lot of ways, and Big Bad Man is also a song that he had, like, the beat he had already. So it's interesting to, it's just an interesting split of his and my personality, you know?
Yeah. But I think, you know, Kiel's production has come on somewhat recently. I mean, he's put a solo album recently, The Snuggle Is Real.
Yeah.
Just it's suddenly, it's a leap ahead of what he was doing before.
Yeah,
And I've always enjoyed what he's done. It's just all of a sudden it's different and it's a little bit more, I don't know, the kind of sample he's using, or I don't know, I can't explain it. I can't put it across as well as I'd like to, but it's just something different about it. It feels a bit crisper. It feels a bit more dynamic. And then that's really come across and come through to this EP as well.
Yeah, I think it comes from the fact that he and I are people that strive to get better, you know?
Mm.
Like, and there's a lot in hip hop that doesn't happen as often, because it's not this like muscle skill you build up. You're not like learning how to play a guitar faster or learning how to play piano in different keys and different scales. So it feels like once you have reached a certain point, you're like, I got this and I know how to rap a song. But like, we constantly are trying to push ourselves to do different things, which is something that we are really disappointed that a lot more people in music don't do, because, you know, they're so locked into what they always make. And it's not really what we're about. We're not really interested in that, you know? Like,
yeah. Well, I alluded to this in my review of the EP. It's like, this is really good, but I just know what's going to come next is going to be better. It just feel, you can feel it from every release, each release. It gets better and better every time. And
yeah.
I'm really, really excited to, you know, I presume that you'll work with Kill again.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah, it seems a fairly safe bet. And I really look forward to whatever it is, you know, whether it's something, you know, like a Slytherin House mixtape, which, you know, the subject matter doesn't appeal, but I'll still enjoy the music, or whether it's something else that, you know, does appeal and I really like.
Yeah, but, and I think that that's all we can hope that people recognize from us, is that it'll always get better. We're always trying to give you better music, and if there's ever a delay in us getting music out, it's because we're trying to get the best thing possible to you. And in the meantime, you probably have some, like, website stuff that'll tide you over, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. I know Michael Kill's got a shitload of stuff up in the air at the moment. So many projects. There's always going to be something from him.
Yeah, it's an addiction for both of us. We're like, you know, we love making music, but it's almost like we love it because it makes us sane, you know?
Yeah.
And we have to do it, even though at times it's painful and it's like we don't have time for it, but we just keep on making it because it's like what we do, you know?
Mm. I think if I was in charge of killing Warrock Towers, what I would like, and this is, don't, you know, obviously dismiss this because it's pure whimsy, but I would like to see you do a dark album, a really dark album.
So we kill.
I don't know where you're fighting at. No, I don't. I would be interested to see, you know, because your vocal delivery lends itself to upbeat music, and yeah, I think your persona comes across, you know, very upbeat, and although you obviously you've got the tracks which come from the heart, or a little more downbeat, I kind of think I've never seen you really do a dark track.
And, yeah, and
correct me if I'm wrong. I mean,
you've seen there's been angry tracks, but not like dark.
Yeah.
Dark tracks, and I don't know, it's a lot of times I think I am scared to make it, not scared, but I'm hesitant to make it, because it just doesn't, it's hard to fit it into my catalog.
Yeah.
But that's definitely something we've talked about. Like, one of my favorite albums of all time is an album called Dino Spectrum, and it's a collective of Minneapolis rappers like Atmosphere Slug and I Self Divine and people like that, who made an album that they were like, you should only listen to this album in the wintertime, right? And it is this like bleak, dark, like sounding like cold wind kind of album that it was such a breath of fresh air from the stuff that they all usually make that I really like that comparison. So I think that's fair. Like, I definitely think at some point you will make something darker, and if not darker, then even angrier you will probably make.
Yeah, I mean, perhaps under a pseudonym, that would be a good compromise, perhaps. But obviously you have your career to think of. You've got, like I say, pure whimsy. But I would be interested to see how that turned out. See if it's actually something you could achieve as well. I don't know. I can't imagine it, but I'd like to hear it.
We'll try. I'll try.
Okay. Well, I've got some questions from the Facebook group, but before then, I have a question, and it's a little bit out of context with the rest of the show so far. But I've noticed on the Middle of Nowhere, and You Dare Call That Thing Human, you're illustrated on the cover of both, and you're barefoot on the cover of both. Is there a reason for that?
No. Oh, wow. there is no reason for that. I actually didn't even notice that until now. I think it's because I hate wearing socks and shoes when I'm at home.
Okay.
And so the reference photos I took of both of those were me at home, and I just happened to be bare feet in there. Wow. But then, I actually did not notice that at all. So, I wish there was a reason now, but there's not. So
I can cut that out and we can make
it. No.
Dark story.
I think that is a good observation to make, and I'm perfectly happy to say that there's no reason. I wish there was one, but there's not. I just don't like shoes and socks. I want my feet to be free.
Hey, people have got to deal with that. It's just their problem, not yours.
Yeah. All right. Okay. Questions.
Okay. Not too many, and I'll start with the ones that don't make any sense to me first. One of which comes from Colby, aka Jesus H. Macy, from the other inferior Nerdcore podcast, Nerdcore Meow. He asks, do you support police?
Do I support police?
I don't really know what that means.
I don't know. Maybe it's because I have a very... this album has a couple of references to, like, brutalizing cops.
Right.
Not me brutalizing police, but police who brutalize people.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's funny. I'm going to turn this into a serious answer, whether he likes it or not. During the time we were making this album, both me and Kill were following all the news about all the police shootings. And it was the first time in a while that something political had kind of made both of us really upset. You know, like, you hear stuff about, like, you know, taxes on the rich or whatever, you know, like, and like, there's a lot of stuff that upsets me, but this is like genuine. It was genuinely upsetting to the point where, like, you really wish you could do something about it. And so I, like, if you listen to me and Kill's recent releases, like his Thought Criminals EP, this EP that we did, they both have, like, these references about anti-cops, which is to say that I'm not, like, anti the idea of police, just anti police shooting innocent people, which I don't think is, like, that controversial a stance to take.
No, really not.
But it just happened to be during this time where, like, you know, it was happening a lot, and you can't ignore that. And I also think that a lot of people, you know, nerdy people, they ignore the news, and they don't want to, like, keep up with politics. And there's a lot of stuff in politics, I think, that are really affecting towards people who are nerds and geeks, whether it's, like, net neutrality or student debt or just the general state of the economy, like, how expensive it is going to be to, like, we follow this. I follow the economy because it's, like, why is gas so expensive, and now why is gas so cheap? Because now I can go on a tour and it's way cheaper when gas is $1.98 rather than $4.60 like it used to be, you know?
Yeah.
And so, like, just kind of moving with that, like, you know, we are very, very political people, and we keep up with it. And so it just was, like, this thing that just kept popping up in the news while we were making this album, to the point where we were like, I think I had to, like, not make more fuck the police lines in my album just to, like, not be repetitive. So, do I support police? I do support police. I don't support them shooting innocent people. So, there you go.
There we go. And a purely, I think, very reasonable stance to take. Okay, the next question is really beyond your ability to answer, I think. But Rafe, aka Press B, asks, how did you become so damn handsome?
Just I eat right, you know, just like vegetables and stuff like that.
I think genetics has a certain amount to do with it, probably.
I have vampire Asian blood, which like makes me look young forever until the day that it runs out, and then I look really old and leathery and gross. So that day is coming, whether you like, you know. So if you want justice, that day is coming for me probably sooner than I'd like. So you know.
Okay, Ian. Oh, I don't have to. American names are difficult for me. You know, we don't have so much variety in the. In terms of people's names, but I'll have a go at this. Ian Solnowski? Solnowski? Solnowski. I think Ian Solnowski. Anyway, he asks, how did your show Otakun 2014 go? Lots of people wanted to make it but stuck waiting in line.
It was great. Otakun has always been very nice to me and Tribe One. We know some people who run it. It's a very different experience than going to a Comic Con because comic fans are very salty. And anime fans are very enthusiastic. And both can be great and annoying in different ways. So, but we always get such a great response because so much of Otakon is cosplay and so many cosplayers are based in comics. And it was fun. And the first year I was there, my set got cut short because a torrential downpour happened during it.
Right.
Literally, I was in the middle of the line and these people just ran on stage with a tarp. And so the second year was much better, and that didn't happen. And I got some sweet. Did I buy anything there? I'm trying to think. I bought like one of those big alpaca things for my girlfriend. Those dolls, and it's sitting here in my living room to remind me always of the good times at Otakon.
There we go. I can't ask for more than that. Next up, I think these are all fairly. Similar in tone. What keeps who asked this? Carl Barbosa asks, what keeps you motivated to keep making music? I mean, you make so much music regularly. What keeps you motivated to do that?
I don't know. It's kind of like a weird mixture of obligation where like I feel like I have to put something on the website every once in a while, and then also there is never a. There's never a shortage of things to make music about, and we're lucky to live in a time when like every movie and franchise and a lot of TV and all of it is so ready to be made into like a nerdy, friendly kind of thing. And I definitely like digest it all and try to like, you know, just have stuff to make music about. But like, I don't know. It's almost like I have this machine. This big machine that has made all this music, and I just kind of like the idea that it just keeps making it, you know?
Yeah. He asked another question. What's your dream collaboration?
Oh, man. Probably Kayflay?
Really?
I'm
gonna see her on Thursday, actually, perform.
I don't know. Do you mean dream like one that's achievable, or dream like Prince or something? Like,
I think you can... probably interpret that any way you like.
It would be somebody like Slug from Atmosphere or Brother Ali or somebody like that. Just people I grew up listening to. Like, yeah. I don't want to do a song with Drake. I mean, I would if he was ready and it would be amazing. But I don't like when you say dream, it's like, it's probably like Slug,
yeah.
Kayflay, POS from Doomtree,
yeah.
Shad. All those people I would love to do a song with.
What? Well, yeah, I mean, Kayflay certainly seems achievable. If I get to talk to her on Thursday, I'll put in a word.
Yeah, sure. That won't be weird at all.
No. Do you know this guy? The
person who knows, you don't even know.
okay, yeah. I won't do that. I would like to see you collaborate with Word Burglar. I mean, so much in common comics wise.
That could totally happen like tomorrow if we wanted it, since he and I are friends. So,
well, I think it's about time we made that a reality. I would like to see that.
There's so many people on that Backburner crew that I would love to work with that I haven't yet. So, hopefully, it'll come.
They're all very talented.
Nice people too. So I was actually supposed to do a song with Timbuktu on this album, but timing didn't work out. So we had talked back and forth about him making a beat for me, and we will hopefully work together in the future. Him and Sox and Les and Berg and people like that would love to.
Well, you collaborated with Chocules.
Yeah, Chocules.
I thought that was such a weird combination, but it worked.
I'll tell a really quick story because I think people will want to hear it more in detail on another podcast that might come out at some point. But so when me and Michael went to South by Southwest, we met Chocules, and he is the nicest guy. But he's also like so unexpected because he's dressed in like all black and always looks really angry. He looks like a little like he looks like Henry Rollins almost. Like it's like he's like jacked. And he's like the nicest guy. He's like vegan, and like he's so the opposite of what we thought he was gonna be. And we just got along with him so well, and we kept telling Jesse Dangerously how much we liked Chocules, to the point where we seriously think Jesse thought we were making fun of Chocules. And the more we try to explain to Jesse that we're being sincere, the more he thinks we are still just like taking the piss out of him about like his friend. And we just had to just stop doing it because, like, we realized that it will never be a time when he understands that how much we got along with him. And so, like, that collaboration was like me and Michael and Chocules together was like me and Michael's like goal for like an album to do a song with Choke on it. So,
yeah, I mean, I know what you mean about his demeanor. He does look very serious, but
he looks very angry. And like we thought he was going to be like a total tough guy, and he turned into like he was just the friendliest guy that we were around. Like him and Les were like the friendliest guys that weekend. So
I'm lining up Chocules as a guest on the show very soon. But his Instagram feed is amazing.
Yeah, he's a very funny guy. He has like so much. He has so much to say. He does those like doodles. It's just a funny guy for somebody who raps so aggressively and also looks so aggressive and hostile. And we just appreciated hanging out with him and Les a lot at South by Southwest.
Cool. Next question from the Facebook forum is from Justin Tour, who is one half of Kudos the Kid. You do the theme tune for the podcast.
Okay.
How do you find the time to write and record the copious amounts of material you release?
Like I said earlier, me and Michael were very quick.
Yeah.
And I think it just comes from having done it so much where, you know, I think because over the years I've done songs to beats every kind, whether it's like indie or gangster or trap or anything, techno, that like, it's like a muscle that like has kind of developed. And it's harder to come up with an idea than it is to actually finish out a song.
Perhaps what he's referring to is that at times it feels like you're releasing a track a day, you know, three tracks on your website, and that sometimes you are. It's like, you get up in the morning, you have your breakfast, you start recording.
Sometimes it's like that. If I have the day free, like wake up, start looking for beats, start coming up with ideas, and then just kind of going into, you know, where I record and seeing if something works. There's a lot of times I record songs that don't work, and those just stay in a folder that will never be released because they're like terrible. But yeah, like it's just kind of like we treat it very much like a job. Some days it's like 9 to 5, you know.
The final question also comes from Justin. It's just, which one of your releases are you most proud of?
Probably Middle of Nowhere.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that's probably an easy answer just because it took the longest and it has the most it has like these guests I'm really proud of, like, you know, Loose Logic sings a chorus on it, and Lou is a person who not only was a huge influence on me as a rapper, but somebody that I looked up to, you know, like he's a guy that had started out making like really ignorant indie rap and then grew to become this like person who plays piano and sings and makes like really meaningful music. And I strangely have become friends with him over the years, and having him on a track is like a huge honor to me because he's somebody that I basically like, I learned how to rap by listening to his records, and you know, just stuff like that I'm very proud of.
Yeah, cool. Well, I've been, yeah, I always feel a little bit removed from the nerdcore and indie rap scene of America. You know, it's obviously it's much bigger over there, but I have had the privilege of seeing, you know, a number of my favourite artists over here in the UK. I've seen Random, I've seen Front a lot, MC Lars, I've seen Dualcore, and most recently, you know, Tribe One, who have toured with MC Lars over here. Now, you've obviously worked with him recently. I mean, what are the chances of you heading over to the UK anytime soon?
I don't know. I mean, I lost my passport, so that's why I need to get a hold of before I can ever go there.
That's a problem.
But, yeah, it's a problem. I don't think they'll let me in, but I would love to. You know, it's like that. UK and Canada are two places I'd really love to tour. Yeah. It's funny. People don't know this about me. I've actually never left the 48 states of the United States in my life.
Okay.
And so it's just not, it just never comes up on my, as like, as a possibility, just because I've never really done it, you know?
Yeah. No, it would be great. I mean, yeah, I think Lars is doing a great thing by giving the opportunity to people. I know, you know, Dualcore are a half British, half American. And also, you know, Tribe One came over with Malibu Shark Attack. Again, Rocky O'Reilly is over in Ireland. And so, yeah, there's that sort of the cross-Atlantic thing going on again. But I think he does a great thing, you know, where he brings somebody over from the States to tour with him. And it gives us an opportunity to see these artists that we might not see otherwise. Yeah, if anyone has any kind of say on who Lars brings with him, then yeah, put the word out for Adam. I would love that. What does 2015 hold in store for you?
I'm, you know, release this EP. I'm gonna do the donation drive in June.
Yeah.
And hopefully start working on my next album later this year for early 2016 release. I've already talked to a couple of producers about doing it, have some ideas. And then other than that, you know, there's going to be like shorter tours kind of here and there, and just basically like still making music on the website. I don't know. Internet's a weird place right now. You know, people are less, it's less viral stuff. There's less curators and gatekeepers of content, and you're just trying to, you're really just trying to figure out how to get the word out. And a lot, I think a lot of it goes back to kind of one-on-one personal contact, touring, you know, connecting with people that way. Yeah. So there's less gimmicks to do. You know, we used to always try aim for a big fish and just like, you know, get a big site or do a big kind of promotional campaign. And it's less gimmicks work nowadays, and it's more organic. So you got to just kind of keep being present, keep making music and being there. So I don't really know what it will hold, but I don't know. 2014 was pretty interesting, so hopefully 2015 will be even better.
Great. Well, I'm gonna keep enjoying Gifted Student and your back catalog. I'm gonna look forward to anything you release on the website, the free music, and also, you know, any further releases you have.
And I'm sure at some point me and Kill will do a new mixtape. We have no idea what to do it about, but yeah. I know that it's on there. We have a couple ideas. We'll see.
It could be that dark album. It could be.
Yeah, well, it'll be only sampling Metallica's Black Album, and it'll just be super dark.
I like it.
No.
Where can people find you on the internet?
You can find me at adamwarrock.com. That's AdamWarrock. You can also find me on Twitter at hugewarrock, which is EUGE Warrock, and on Facebook and Tumblr and Instagram. And and my music's at adamwarrock.bandcamp.com. The EP is $8 digital. The jewel case copy is $10. And I'm pretty sure that at a certain like point in the next couple of weeks, the CDs will no longer be for sale on the website. So if you want one of those antique compact discs, you should get it now, because otherwise you'll have to come to a show to get one. And go support Michael Kill as well. He's a good guy who makes good music, and he's not as much of an asshole as you think he is from his persona. So
he's an absolute delight every time I speak to him.
Yeah.
Adam, thank you very much for joining me. It's been a real honor and a privilege. Thank you ever so much.
Yeah. Thank you for having me.
Last name Quill, first name Hall, you know the rest. Come on, you know you can't test. Behind